Hey everybody, welcome to Voices from the Frontlines. This is your host, Eric Mann. Today is going to be part two of Syria Showdown. I think we're going to do about a half an hour. I have a lot of different articles I want to read to you, selections of sort of a menu of different points of view in the press. And then right around 4:30, we're going to go back to the phones as we did last week because the listeners were really great. I'm going to give you a little introduction about how I'm seeing the situation in Syria at my very low level of consciousness. Then we're going to read some articles, and then we're going to go to the phones. You know, there's a lot of things I know a lot about, and a lot of things I don't know a lot about. And the Middle East is one I don't know a lot about. So there's a lot of different ways. Last time we had several people on the show. And this week I just did a lot of reading, especially today, to just see, can I try to understand what's happening out there? So I'll tell you briefly my assessment of the situation, and then we're going to read some selections. I'll make some brief commentaries on a variety of different selections from the press. And then, as I said, at 4:30 today, 818-985-5735, you can tell me, don't just tell me what you think. Tell me something you read. Tell me something you heard. Give a fact. You know facts. They are really good things. Mao said, seek truth from facts. So tell me something you learned this week about Syria that could help us stop the United States from going into Syria. Now, I have a couple of really encouraging stories. If you remember last week when we had Norman Solomon on the show, I had to admit that I was a little skeptical about, well, yeah, Congress has a chance to rise up. And I said, yeah, but who? Who in Congress has a chance to rise up? And they mentioned a few people, but basically there weren't that many people rising up. But one of the people rising up is this guy, Alan Grayson from Florida, who's pretty incredible. He's a congressman from Florida, liberal congressman from Florida. But more importantly, as I think I expressed to you last week, it's very hard to take on the president of the United States inside his own party. One, the president can play hardball. You want to get a position on a committee, he has some impact on that. He can punish you in a lot of different ways. He can exclude you from a lot of things. Now, if you're powerful enough, you know Obama, look at how much he's kissed up to John Boehner. So if you have something that Obama wants, he will, in fact, accede to some of your wishes. But if you don't, you'll be punished. So one of the things that's been very exciting is this guy, Alan Grayson, who I should learn more about. And for some of you out there who know more about him, can use that at 818-985-5735 to expand our knowledge. But let me start with his own op-ed in the New York Times. It's called On the Syria Vote, Trust But Verify, by Alan Grayson, who, as I said, is a congressman from Florida. And we're going to give you his number in a minute because I'd like you to call his office after I read you this, and thank him, encourage him to continue the fight with the Obama administration. Because basically, I think, let me just get right to the story that we all understand. A week ago, it seemed pretty clear that the Obama administration had every intent to strafe and destabilize the Assad regime in Syria, allegedly to stop the use of chemical weapons, which were not even verified. The theory was to show American might, whatever that meant. As you read, I'm going to read you several things from some establishment magazines about why they think this is such a great idea to prove the United States' power in the Middle East. I mean, one thing it shows, the United States, in some ways, is a declining power. It went into Iraq, as you know, but did not succeed in conquering. Then it went into Afghanistan and is now withdrawing its troops from Afghanistan with no clear victory in sight. Secondly, I think you also know it just makes its enemies and allies as it goes along. You know that the United States went into Afghanistan allegedly after the Taliban, who allegedly were tied to Al-Qaeda. We also know the United States, if you remember, was tied to Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan when they were trying to defeat the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. Now, as the problem developed more in Afghanistan, the United States has reached back to the Taliban to try to negotiate with them because nobody can govern that country. So if you've been having trouble following the shifting set of alliances, so have I, but the main point being that the United States is just in a naked power control for the Middle East and is playing off any forces that it can. It's now trying to stand up to the Syrian government, who it knows is friendly with Iran, and who are among the so-called resistance fighters in Syria that the United States is tactically allied with, Al-Qaeda. So, folks, for those of you who've been following this, we knew to begin with that this was going to be a transparent power grab on the United States. But the fact that the British Parliament refused to support Britain sending just a few token troops, the British said we're tired of being the poodle to the United States, threw Obama into a setback, and he decided to take this to Congress, which, as I'll read to you later, the economists think is a very bad idea for the President of the United States to go to Congress, because he has to maintain his unilateral ability to intervene all over the world. So it is a sign of weakness that Obama has gone to Congress to sort of implicate them. A week ago, I'll be honest with you, I thought when we were talking again to Norman Solomon, I said, Norman, but how in the world is Congress going to rise up against the president? Well, I'm happy to say that I was wrong. There's tremendous opposition in Congress against a U.S. intervention in Syria, including by a lot of Republicans. So the president is caught between a rock and a hard place of his own making, at which point John Kerry, who also makes up the stuff as he goes along, says, well, we're going to go into Syria. The only way we don't go into Syria is if the Syrian government gives up the chemical weapons. I saw him on Rachel Maddow being quoted. He says, but that's not going to happen. So then Putin, the president of Russia, says, well, actually, I think I can work with the Syrians to get them to give up their weapons and their chemical weapons, which totally throws Kerry off. And then the United States trying to escalate, says, yeah, but he has to actually give the weapons up and destroy them. And then the United Nations says that, and then Russia comes back and says, well, actually, the Assad government is willing to do that. So to finish my little monologue, the United States was aggressive in Syria. It got caught with its essential pants down in that it couldn't get congressional support. In a funny way, Putin rescued them from an international defeat, and yet the United States is still trying to say, yeah, but they wouldn't have done this with Putin if it wasn't for our threats of military intervention, and we're still not going to give this up. And then to make it even more, oh, great, we are going to get Don Bustani, and we're going to try to call him any minute, if we could do that. If we can get Don and get him on the phone with Middle Eastern Focus, that's terrific. So, if you follow this bouncing ball, at the end of the day, the United States is claiming that its threat of military power is why the Syrians made these concessions. But, on another level, they're really happy that Putin has pulled their coals out of the fire. Now, I'm going to start with Alan Grayson, and I'm very happy that Don Bustani from Middle East in Focus is going to be on the phone with me. So we're going to start with Grayson. And, D'Angelo, you're going to call Don? Okay. Don Bustani, you on the phone?
I'm with you now.
Don, I'm very happy to get you on such short notice. I'm going to start, Don, by reading Alan Grayson's op-ed in the New York Times and a couple of other things, and I'm very happy that you're going to participate in this conversation.
Very good.
Okay, so this is on the Syria vote, trust but verify. The documentary record regarding an attack on Syria consists of just two papers, a four-page unclassified summary and a 12-page classified summary. The first enumerates only the evidence in favor of an attack. I'm not allowed to tell you what's in the classified summary, but you can draw your own conclusion. On Thursday, I asked the House Intelligence Committee staff whether there was any other documentation available, classified or unclassified. Their answer was no. The Syria chemical weapons summaries are based on several hundred underlying elements of intelligence information. The unclassified summary cites intercepted telephone calls, quote, social media postings and the like. So you can imagine they got it off Twitter. But not one of these is actually quoted or attached, not even clips from YouTube. As to whether the classified summary is the same, I couldn't possibly comment, but again, draw your own conclusions. This is Alan Grayson, a congressman from Florida. Over the last week, the administration has run a full court press on Capitol Hill, lobbying members from both parties in both houses to vote in support of its plan to attack Syria. And yet we members are supposed to accept without question that the proponents of a strike on Syria have accurately depicted the underlying evidence, even though the proponents refuse to show any of it to us or the American public. In fact, even gaining access to just the classified summary involves a series of unreasonably high hurdles. We have to descend into the bowels of the Capitol Visitor Center to a room four levels underground. Per the instructions of the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, note-taking is not allowed. This is by members of Congress now. Once we leave, we're not permitted to discuss the classified summary with the public, the media, our constituency, or even other members. Nor are we allowed to do anything to verify the validity of the information that's been provided. And this is just the classified summary. It's my understanding that the House Intelligence Committee made a formal request for the underlying intelligence report several days ago. I haven't heard an answer yet, and frankly, I don't expect one.
He writes well, doesn't he?
He does write well. Compare this lack of transparency with the administration's treatment of the Benghazi attack. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, to her credit, made every single relevant classified email, cable, and intelligence report available to every member of Congress. I know this because I read them all. Secretary Clinton had nothing to hide. Well, he's hiding behind Hillary Clinton, but that's another story. Her successor, John Kerry, has said repeatedly that this administration isn't trying to manipulate the intelligence reports the way the Bush administration did to rationalize its invasion of Iraq. But by refusing to disclose the underlying data even to members of Congress, the administration is making it impossible for anyone to judge independently whether that statement is correct. Perhaps the edict of an early administration applies, trust but verify. The danger of the administration's approach was illustrated by a widely read report last week in the Daily Caller, which claimed that the Obama administration had selectively used intelligence to justify military strikes in Syria, with one report, quote, doctored so that it leads to a reader to just the opposite conclusion reached by the original report. The allegedly doctored report attributes the attack to the Syrian general staff, but according to the Daily Caller, it was clear that the Syrian general staff were out of their minds with panic that an unauthorized strike had been launched by the 155th Brigade in express defiance of their instructions. I don't know who is right, the administration or the Daily Caller, but for me to make the correct decision on whether to allow an attack, I need to know, and so does the American public. We've reached the point where the classified information system prevents even trusted members of Congress who have security clearances from learning essential facts, and then inhibits them from discussing and debating what they do know. And this extends to matters of war and peace, money and blood. The security state is drowning in its own phlegm. That's a good line. My position is simple. If the administration wants me to vote for war, on this occasion or any other, then I need to know all the facts, and I'm not the only one who feels that way, says Alan Grayson, a Democratic representative from Florida, as a member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. So we have Don Bassani with us, who is the host of Middle East in Focus. Don, you've done this work for...
Eric, the former host of Middle East in Focus, because as MEIF listeners heard on the show of August 4th, I announced my retirement from the show. It's been a long time, and I'm looking for younger people to take over producing and hosting that show. And Alan Minsky and Bernard Duncan will be working on it as soon as the October fund drive is over. And so look for Middle East in Focus to continue with younger producers and hosts.
Well, I hope you're still in the game, because we need your analysis, Don. You know, I mean, you're a terrific commentator, and whether or not you're the host anymore, you're still somebody that we really need to be in the so-called free marketplace of ideas.
You can't step out of the game once you're in it, really.
That's right. So given your long history, what's going on in Congress? I mean, this seems pretty encouraging at a time when I know you and I have been through so many times where we couldn't say that.
Congress is no better today than it was a few years ago. However, the options as to whether to get the U.S. militarily involved in Syria or not got through to a lot of congressmen who are bought legislators. Their seats are bought for them by the big money interests. Now, forget the Middle East for just a moment, if I can just make a comment on this. The U.S. is in serious trouble because we allow private money to fund our elections. And what that means is that the big money interests support a potential members of the Congress who will legislate the way the big money interests will profit. And when they have big money to spend on their fund advertising, they can buy tons of television and radio advertising, billboards, and mailing advertising. And that kind of assault on listeners' eyes and ears and minds gets people to vote for people who simply had money, and they don't listen to the debates between the opposing candidates, and so they don't get the people into the House and the Senate that they really want to represent their interests.
But Don, let me raise a different point. I wasn't saying that, I mean, this is a capitalist society, and the fight over the moneyed interest in Congress is, you know, which is true, has gone on sort of forever. What I'm getting to is not that there's an insurgent Congress, but there may be a set of contradictions developing over the fact that the defeat in Afghanistan, the defeat in Iraq. What I'm getting to is, why are they changing? In other words, the ruling class can still make a decision not to do something, still in the interest of the capitalist class. Why do you think that there's so much split right now inside of Congress, given the fact that you just said that the money interests do still control its bought and sold Congress?
Well, I have a feeling, and I have information, as you have and everybody has, regarding the will and the attitudes of the American people who have been pressuring their representatives. I mean pressuring. There are all kinds of petitions that are dropping into my inbox every day, and the Congress, the Senate, and the House are hearing from their people, and the petitioners are also phoning them. So no matter where their money support comes from, they are responding, many of them, are responding to their constituencies.
Well, given that, I'm going to read you something, Don, from Politico. It's called Liberal Groups Break with Obama on Syria. And one of the reasons I think this is important is because even the liberal groups have been so supportive of Obama and so unwilling to take him on, including MSNBC. So I just want to read you this, Don. This is called Liberal Groups Break with Obama in Syria by Alexander Burns at Politico. Barack Obama has a problem on the left. As the White House seeks to marshal bipartisan support for military intervention in Syria, leading members of the coalition of anti-war groups that advocate for pullback from Iraq and Afghanistan have finally weighed in against the president. On Wednesday, two prominent liberal advocacy groups announced their opposition to striking Syria. VoteVets.org, the combat veterans-oriented organization that spent more than $3 million during the 2012 campaign, and MoveOn.org, the grassroots group that helped lead opposition to invading Iraq in the first place. A day earlier, the Win Without War Coalition, another prominent force in rallying opposition to the Iraq War, also released a lengthy statement weighing in against Syria intervention. The Democratic Party leadership remains squarely behind Obama in his call for limited military action against the regime of President Bashar Assad, who is alleged to have used sarin gas against civilians on multiple occasions. Republican House Speaker John Boehner and House Majority Leader Eric Cantor have also endorsed the use of force. But already, anxious proponents of intervention could have a bigger headache to deal with thanks to dissension within Obama's own party. Anna Gayand, Executive Director of MoveOn.org Civic Action, said a vote of the organization's membership that wrapped up Wednesday morning found nearly three-quarters opposing the use of force. The reports of chemical weapons that we're hearing are horrific, but our members don't believe that military action is the solution, Gallant told Politico. Move on, and our 8 million members are going to be making sure our congressional members hear our voices. Gallant said that it would involve both phone calls to members of Congress and a national day of action on Monday, September 9th. VoteVets.org founder John Soltz announced his organization's stance in a Huffington Post op-ed, writing that any military action without a decisive end could entangle the United States in a long conflict with Assad or a messy process of rebuilding a post-Assad Syria. I fully understand that President Obama is painting himself into a political corner, but VoteVets.org cannot support this rush to conflict, Soltz wrote. At this point, if we want to help without committing the United States to another war, humanitarian assistance to bolster a moderate opposition still represents our best course of action in Syria. The opposition of Sulz's group is perhaps a bit more surprising than MoveOn's position. While MoveOn routinely positions itself to the left of the official Democratic Party, VoteVets has often won praise from party strategists for its supportive role backing Democrats in congressional elections. Activists on the left have been slow to mobilize against action in Syria, due partly to what several Democrats characterize as the moral complexity of the situation involving the regime's alleged use of chemical weapons against civilians, rather than reflexively coming out against attacking Syria. Several liberal groups first urged Obama to consult Congress before taking action. Okay, so the point is that first, world pressure, in my opinion, has pushed Obama to go to Congress, which was not his initial intention. Then in going to Congress, I think he's been surprised that a lot of liberal groups that have traditionally wanted to be on good terms with the president are willing to take him on. Because remember that most of the opposition to Afghanistan and Iraq came because those were initiated by a Republican president. And most of the anti-war forces are not nearly as aggressive when it comes to taking on a Democrat. Now, Don, tell us a little bit about what you think is going on in Syria on the ground, and just explain a little bit of background to what the United States is trying to get involved in and perhaps some of the constraints on U.S. power.
Well, Eric, what's going on the ground in Syria is not reported to us the way news where we have journalists' feet on the ground reporting directly to the L.A. Times, New York Times, the networks, and so forth, because the Syrians have not allowed journalists free rein, and not even let them in.
Don, hold on one just second. 818-985-5735. We have a couple of people on the phones ready. We're going to probably go to the phones in like 7 or 8 or 9 minutes. So start lining up now. And Don, thank you, please. This is Don Bastani, former host of Middle East in Focus. And
one last point, Eric.
No, I wasn't. I was letting you, didn't even make your point yet, Don. I just wanted to make sure I got the phone number. Please go ahead.
What we have going on in America now is a no more war movement.
No, Don, I want you to get back to the ground in Syria.
Yeah. What we hear about what's going on the ground in Syria, remember, I'm not there. So my source of information is what's going on the ground is your source of information and everybody's source who reads the papers and listens to the news. What's going on, if the news doesn't tell you, the complexity of the different groups and entities that are in conflict there is immensely complex and really confusing to the American people, because we're used to conflicts where the combatants are identified. We have handles on them. We know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are and who the neutral guys are. But in Syria, that is not known. Those labels keep falling off whoever you put them on for a moment. So it's what's going on the ground in Syria is confusing and lethal.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things I think is really interesting, we're going to go to the phones in a minute. Oh, folks, you're doing great. The one thing I think is particularly interesting, and then I want to go to the phones, is as follows.
Yeah.
During the anti-war movement in Vietnam, and also during the civil rights movement, one of the reasons why the United States had some constraints on its power was because of the Soviet Union and China. And at that time, the Soviet Union and China were more, in my opinion, still were socialist governments of some sort, but certainly in alliance with the liberation movements of black people in the United States, and were openly supporting the Vietnamese. Now, we know that after the overthrow of the Soviet Union, the present Russia doesn't claim to be a socialist government. In fact, it's a pretty corrupt capitalist government. The Communist Party in China is still a communist party, but it's, by its own definition, is running a explicitly capitalist market-based economy. Nonetheless, both countries are able to present some countervailing power to the United States. And it's very obvious that Putin is trying to build an alliance both with Iran and with Syria, who are the two forces, both secular forces, by the way, that the United States is trying in some way to overthrow. So the fact that the United States got outmaneuvered by Putin, please see Edward Snowden, where Putin made a very conscious choice to take on the United States publicly in this way, is a very encouraging set of developments. And I would argue that without the Soviet Union, and it looks like China as well, with Russia and China, the United States might have been a lot more aggressive. But they realized that some of this stuff might backfire into the hands of both China and Russia. And I think that's one of the positive developments that's impacting certain people in Congress. Now, having said that, we now have Susan from Redondo. And Jesse, if you can keep the big letters up, we're going to go to the phones. And Don, you stay with us if you could. Hi, Susan. Hi. Welcome to Voices from the Frontlines. Glad to have you on the show. What are your thoughts?
Are you asking for
Susan? I am asking you, Susan from Redondo. How are you doing?
Hi. By the way, thank you last week for putting the free congressional switchboard number up. I still think it's one of the easiest ways to call Congress because you can just hang up and hit redial and ask for the next congressperson. And probably even better, and I love Alan Grayson, and rather than swamping his office with thank yous, though that's a good idea, and maybe somebody can start a petition online that's a thank you for his courage to stand up. But he also has a pledge that he wants the other Congress people to sign, which is, and to ask is even better than swamping his office with thank you calls, would be to call as many Congress people as you can and say, have you signed Alan Grayson's No Cuts Pledge?
That's terrific.
And right now, our local legislators have not signed it.
Let's stay on this a minute. The other number I got was, of course, Dianne Feinstein's number, who is an arch hawk, 202-228-3954. But you know more than I do, so tell me, how do we reach out to other members? Like, who are some members of Congress?
There's a free congressional switchboard number. Actually, there are several, and you can also ask them for the 202 numbers when you call the switchboard operators. The number I have is 866-220-0044. And you can also get directly into the White House. You'll get the White House operator at 202-456-1414. But when you call that number, you only have about three words before you get switched to the ever frustrating comment line. And so you can just say, you know, no strikes in Syria or Medicare for all. You know, you can get enough words in. And if you get five or ten of your friends and say, let's do a call in on Monday or let's do a call in lunch tomorrow, then you can, and it takes 1 minute or less to make each one of those calls.
Well, listen, I really want to thank you because a lot of times I've been asking people in terms of our listeners, let's focus on what we can do. One of the things I have to say to just keep you on the line for one more minute is that what's exciting about it is there's something in play. That Congress, you know, there's apparently 200 votes already and no votes in Congress. John McCain was almost crucified at one of the meetings he went to in Arizona. There are right-wing contradictions on this war. I'm going to move to the next caller, but who in Southern California do you think would be a congressperson who might be willing to take a more aggressive stand who we should be focusing on?
Maybe Barbara Boxer, but I can't think of any who, I mean, they haven't even signed Alan Grayson's No Cuts Pledge, but I think if we keep pressuring Pelosi and Harry Reid and all of ours, you know, and if you don't know who your congressional representative is, you can ask the switchboard operator and they'll be able to tell you.
Thanks a lot. That was a terrific call and
thank
really
you.
Appreciate
it. By the way,
it.
I've tried to get other KPFK programs to give out that number and to talk about the congressional switchboard because it's so easy. All you need is one number, and you can call any and all of them.
Say it one more time because I don't have a pencil.
You who's put it on, so thank you.
Say the number one more time.
866-220-0044.
Thanks. That's all I want to do.
The White House is 1-4-202. 256-1414.
Terrific.
What a terrific listener you have there, Eric.
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
She's excellent, yeah.
A good organizer.
Excellent, yes, yes.
Tony from Long Beach, how you doing? You're with Eric Mann and Don Pistani.
Yes, thank you very much, and I'll keep it cogent and very succinct because you said a minute maximum comment. You asked at the top of the show what specific information than just somebody's theory or opinion about what the motive is. I can recommend you to go Peter Kornbluh. He's the head of the National Security Archive. Here are the two documents. NSDM 133 Directive, yeah? And then the Project for the New American Century and the Defense Planning Guidance. So quickly, and I got about 34 seconds left in time to myself. Quickly, the main goal, besides Iran and other areas they want to have total control, is privatization. The Assad government is not moving fast enough for U.S. corporate interests for privatization. He wants to privatize, and he has been neoliberally privatizing, but not with the U.S. contracts in U.S. favor. He's giving deference to China, Russia, and Iran over a liquid gas pipeline, and that they want him to basically give him the fruits of privatization, and he's holding back and deferring to other people.
Well, I think that's really great, and one of the things to add is that I think it reinforces some things I was saying, because I was saying Russia, China, Iran, and you were saying the same thing. Peter Kornbluh was pretty amazing. He's done a lot of really great books. How do we reach give our listeners the citations again, please?
Yeah, the first one actually came out, believe it or not, the first one came out during the Reagan administration. In National Security Memorandum 133, it basically said after the fall of the Soviet Union, all the Middle East and other third world countries are going to be a free market zone for neoliberal Milton Friedman structural adjustment. They planned that a long time ago. The second one is the Defense Planning Guidance that came out in 1992, that when I was in Hamburg, Germany, I met XBA, CIA agent Philip Agee, and he shared that with me. It later morphed into the Project for the New American Century.
Thank you so much.
The zone of the Middle East is what the goal is.
Sounds great, and thank you very much for staying on message and staying on time.
All right.
A real good listener. Hey, Rick from West L.A., this is Eric Mann.
Excuse me, Eric.
Yeah, Don, please come on in, Don.
I need to excuse myself and to listen to you and your excellent listeners.
Okay.
Thank you for calling me. And it was a pleasure being with you.
Well, listen.
Now I'm going to listen to the rest of the show with your terrific callers.
Well, listen, I've learned a lot from you, so it'll be fun. And yeah, we have some really terrific callers. I learn a lot. So that was Don Pistani, an amazing person who's done such great work. And well, as he say, you can't leave the game once you start it. So he's not going anywhere. Hey, Rick from West L.A., what do you have to say and what do you have to teach us?
Okay.
Eric Mann.
I know, Eric. Yeah, I'm grateful for the show. And there's an article in by Youssef Bodansky from Global Research entitled "Did the White House Help Plan the Chemical Attack?" Also, there is a ForbiddenKnowledgeTV.com of Ben Swan, and Ben Swan says, "Why are we helping al-Nusra?" And they show the whole contradiction of what's going on with the so-called Syrian rebels, which are mostly run by mercenaries from many of the Arab countries. And then I suggest highly that everyone go listen to General Wesley Clark's promotion of the Pentagon plan to take out seven countries, Arab countries, in 5 years. He learned of this when he got back when he retired from NATO. And I think that this information will help a lot of people get straight as to what is going on. The United States is trying to prevent Iran from becoming a power in the region. And, you know, they're just continuously messing with Iran when, in fact, they're responsible for gassing Iran. They're also responsible for gassing the United States, people in the United States here in Los Angeles, with malathion, which is an organophosphate gas from the Nazis, and they've also used Aspergillus fumigatus has been dumped on the United States population by the U.S. Army since 1957. And so, you know, these people are just incredible hypocrites, and these con people at the Congress need to be replaced.
Thank you so much, my brother. That was really great.
Thank you.
I wanted to just read a couple of sources here. There's one here, and I'm going to take a couple of 818-985-5735. There's a really good article by Andrew Basevich on Tom Dispatch, The Hill to the Rescue on Syria. Don't hold your breath. He has a good quote here. He says, now, in effect, Obama was saying to Congress, I'm keen to launch a war of choice. And parenthesis, understand this is once again, these are all wars of choice. The United States is not being invaded by anybody. But first, I want you guys to okay it. In politics, where voluntarily forfeiting power is an unnatural act, Obama's invitation qualifies as beyond unusual. Whatever the calculations behind his move, its effect rates somewhere between unprecedented and positively bizarre. The heir to imperial prerogatives acting, well, decidedly unimperial. Obama's a constitutional lawyer, of course, and it's pleasant to imagine that he acted out of due regard for what Article 1, Section 8 of that document plainly states, namely that, quote, the Congress shall have power to declare war. Take his explanation at face value, and the president's decision ought to earn plaudits from strict constructionists across the land. The Federalist Society should offer Obama an honorary lifetime membership. Of course, seasoned political observers, understandably steeped in cynicism, dismissed the president's professed rationale out of hand and immediately began speculating about his actual motivation. The most popular explanation was this. Having painted himself into a corner, Obama was trying to lure members of the legislative branch into joining him there. Rather than a belated conversion experience, the president's literal reading of the Constitution actually amounted to a sneaky political ruse. After all, the president had gotten himself into a pickle by declaring back in August 2012 that any use of chemical weapons by the government of Bashar al-Assad would cross a supposedly game-changing, quote, red line. When the Syrians, quote, apparently called his bluff, Obama felt himself facing uniformly unattractive military options that range from the patently risky, that is to say, listen to this, joining forces with the militants intent on toppling Assad, to the patently pointless, firing a shot across the bow of the Syrian ship of state. Meanwhile, the broader American public, awakening from its summertime snooze, was demonstrating remarkably little enthusiasm for another armed intervention in the Middle East. Making matters worse, still, U.S. military leaders and many members of Congress, Republican, Democratic alike, were expressing serious reservations or actual opposition. Press reports even cited leaks by unnamed officials who characterized the intelligence linking Assad to the chemical attacks as no, quote, slam dunk, a painful reminder of how bogus information had paved the way for the disastrous, an unnecessary Iraq war. For the White House, even a hint that Obama in 2013 might be replaying the Bush scenario of 2003 was anathema. Check this out. One more thing. I'm going to go to the phones again. 818, and we're going to get to Jeremy from Kansas. This is really good. The Hill to the Rescue on Syria. Don't hold your breath. The president also discovered that recruiting allies to join him in this venture was proving a hard sell. It wasn't just the Arab League's refusal to get an administration strike against Syria its seal of approval. Oh, that was bad enough. Jordan's King Abdullah, America's, quote, closest ally in the Arab world, publicly announced that he favored talking to Syria rather than bombing it. As for Iraq, that previous beneficiary of American liberation, its government was refusing even to allow U.S. forces access to its airspace. Ingrates! For Obama, the last straw may have come when America's most reliable, not to say subservient, European partner refused to enlist in yet another crusade to advance the cause of peace, freedom, and human rights in the Middle East. With memories of Tony and George W. apparently eclipsing those of Winston and Franklin, the British Parliament rejected Prime Minister David Cameron's attempt to position the United Kingdom along the United States. Parliament's vote dashed Obama's hope of forging a coalition of two, and so investing a war of choice against Syria with at least a modicum of legitimacy. Pretty good. John F. Kennedy once remarked that defeat is an orphan. Here was a wharf bereft of parents even before it even begun. And that was, I just want to give this guy credit, really nicely written, Andrew Basevich on Tom Dispatch. Go on Tom Dispatch. Really nicely written, I think, something. The Hill to the Rescue on Syria, don't hold your breath. I think what we're getting out of this is there are some contradictions in the world developing. It doesn't mean perfect, but there are some restrictions on U.S. power. If the British will not go along, the Arab League will not support it, Jordan will not support it, Syria, Iran, China, and Russia are trying to build a countervailing force to the United States. Hey, pretty, and in fact, Congress is up in arms. Speaking for myself, I haven't been this optimistic about some of the international and local contradictions in a long time. You're on with Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines. We're now going to go to Jeremy from Lawrence, Kansas. Jeremy, great. I guess you're listening to us on kpfk.org. Nice to have you, Jeremy. What's up?
Thanks, Eric. First of all, the historical context of this moment, and I think the previous caller was exactly right to point to the Project for a New American Century, and that group of American neo-imperialists and their desire to for a re-ascendant imperial America. Add into that Bernard Lewis, the British imperialist, and then for the Israeli extremists, the Oded Yanon plan and the Clean Break document from the 90s that was headed up for the Likudniks by Richard Perle, the Prince of Darkness, which calls for a breaking up of their perceived enemies in the region. In terms of what we need to do right now, the key piece of information out there that I see is a memo that's been led up by Ray McGovern and the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. It's at Consortium News, and I think it's titled Obama Warned on Syrian Intel. And it makes the claim, actually the assertion, with some backing narrative that the president, potentially, but definitely the Congress, the media, and the American people is being duped. The intelligence is being frauded up primarily by the CIA director Brennan, and that in fact Assad did not do it. The extremist branch of the rebels did it with help from the Turkish, Qatari, Saudis, and with a U.S. Intelligence overseeing the whole matter. This has been put forth to the White House. Now we need this to really get into the Congress. A few places I would stress that we focus on, and let's not forget to continue calling Congress, because of course AIPAC is making their big push this week, and of course the military-industrial complex is trying to make a trade-off with the warmongering branches of the Republicans. But we can focus on the Black Caucus. I think they're crucial in all of this. Keith Ellison, the first Muslim congressman, is wholeheartedly for a military strike. So apparently is Maxine Waters. At least Barbara Lee is holding the line. But what we need is someone to open up Syria Gate hearings in the Congress, get Ray McGovern and his allies in there, get the intelligence on the record, because the White House says that no one is questioning the intelligence. However, Ray McGovern and his allies say that many people within the intelligence community in the United States are questioning it, not questioning it, know that it's frauded up. The British know
and,
that
and
it's
excuse
frauded
me, I'm going to have to hold you there. You're doing great. If you have information, send it to Eric@voicesfromfrontlines.com. Eric@voicesfromfrontlines.com, and we're going to put it up on our website. It's 4:52. I'm going to ask people now, Matt from Topanga, Harvey from Norwalk, George from Brea, Mac from Orange County, please do the one-minute drill now. I've been a little, I want to make sure all four of you at least get on. Great. So Matt from Topanga, nice to have you on the show.
Yeah, I 100% agree about the Project for the New American Century, but I also think that they're really getting freaked out because the shoots of democracy, for the first time, are really starting to spring up through the oligarchic cement of this dysfunctional proto-fascist system that exists, and that they're going to try to snatch the last jewels of war profiteering in the lifeboats of the empire, because we see the empire wears no clothes. The tectonic plate of the populace, which is the last remaining legitimate branch of government will subvert the empire and the republic will rise.
Hey, that sounds good. Very poetic. Hey, Harvey from Norwalk, let's hear from you.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate your show so much. You really have laid it on the line about the facts and this country's bellicose action, or at least their bellicose stance. And I think what is so relevant is still today the speech that MLK gave in April of 67.
Absolutely.
And I think it's so relevant to this today. If he was alive today, I'm sure he would be speaking out against this, and he would have disapproved of the fact that they let Barack Obama do the speech in commemoration of that march, of the march in 63. But the speech he gave in 67, I think, is so relevant to today. I just wanted to add that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And thank you so much. This is Eric Mann. The speech he's talking about is the Riverside Church speech against the war in Vietnam. It's in my book, Playbook for Progressives. Go on Google and get that speech. It's one of the truly, truly great speeches. And thank you so much for pointing it out to us. George from Brea, how you doing? You're with Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines.
Hi, Eric. Briefly, I couldn't believe yesterday when I heard Hillary Clinton threaten Russia with military action. If you'll listen closely, she threatened Syria and Russia in the same sentence, and nobody picked up on this in the media. It just shows you how quickly these things can snowball into some ridiculous war, and Hillary Clinton is such a warmonger. We can't let her get into the White House. Thank you.
She's very dangerous. I mean, she's absolutely really dangerous. I mean, I completely agree with you. Every single statement she makes is a provocation. Here's a positive again. Putin hates her guts. And again, I don't want to be, I guess I am becoming a Putin fan, because he has said the United States is an empire and the rest of the world is not going to put up with you trying to take over the world. But she is a very, very dangerous person. And any Democrats who are going to get involved in the next election, I think anybody but Hillary would not be a bad slogan. So thank you. Mac from Orange County and Jeff from Arrowhead. We're going to try to both get you in. Mac?
Yes. Hi. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, I'll try to be as quick as possible because I know you only have a couple minutes. There are two things I'd like to bring up to your listeners' attention because most of them are not aware. Number one, most people think that the United States goes to war and wants to take resources from different countries and things like that. That is not the case. United States is sent to war by the military-industrial complex so they can take the money of you and I, us people who work and pay taxes. They funnel our tax money into the military complex.
And I'm going to have to hold you right there because I want to get to Jeff from Arrowhead. Thank you so much. You'll be the last caller.
Okay. Yeah. I'm an attorney who's been looking at the so-called evidence. It's all hearsay. And then they tell you that they have something they're going to give trusted members of Congress in secret. That's the predicate. You have to have facts to support the conclusion. That hasn't been proven in my mind, not at all. Nothing. People just reach for that conclusion because they have their agenda. Adelson now is pushing very hard. Of course, we know he pushed Newt Gingrich to back Israel in every possible way. So this is pretty clear what's happening here. Thank you very much.
Hey, everybody, I really want to, once again, if we could put the numbers back on, and thank you. First of all, there's this 866. This is Eric Mann. You've been listening to Voices from the Frontlines. We happen to have D'Angelo's back as our person on the controls, which is great. 866-220-0044, the Congressional Switchboard. You can send remarks to Eric at voicesfromfrontlines.com. We really, really want to thank you, our listeners, always for calling in. I'll see you next Tuesday at 4, and I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot. So Eric at voicesfromfrontlines.com, and we'll talk to you next week.